Hello, hi, what is up, and welcome to In This Economy, the podcast where people from Zimbabwe and around the world discuss how they are navigating life in the current economic circumstances. With me, your host, Kim Nyajega. Hi, how's it going? Welcome to the platform. Firstly, Happy New Year. This is the first episode of the year. I'm super excited to be back behind a microphone after, what a long time, you know. In the past, you know, whenever I've taken a hiatus, listeners will get back to me, you know, giving me feedback, telling me about the episode. And one thing I've gotten consistently from different people is like, listen, whenever you take a hiatus and you come back, you apologize way too much. So I'm trying to be mindful of that. But also, I do feel like as listeners, you do deserve an explanation for what's been going on. And honestly, I do not have like a really big or good excuse. You know, 2024 was such a hectic year, a great year for me personally, but also such a hectic year. And I just did not have discipline with content creating at all. And I know I wanted to go into different, you know, mediums, different, just video and doing more TikToks and all of that kind of stuff. And I just did this thing where if I didn't get right the first time, I was kind of like, meh, done, you know, zero discipline. And I do want to, you know better, do better, grown up. But I do want to be more disciplined. It's not that I lost my passion or interest in creating this platform. I just did not have great follow through. I think I have so many diaries, planners, journals, just full of ideas for what I want to do. I've talked to people about ideas for episodes, all of those things, and I just didn't follow through, which is terrible on my part. But you know, can't turn back time. You have to give up hope for a better past, and we're here now. So thank you for tuning into this episode, and for the people who listened, continue to listen, continue to plug people to the podcast, continue to share, and all of that. Like, the stats did not stop climbing, not at the same rate, but the fact that, you know, so many people still listen, I was still getting DMs, people listening to episodes again, people just discovering the podcast, and it's so great. It's one of my favorite parts of creating content, honestly, is getting to engage on, you know, topics that I think about, that I care about, with other people who have similar interests or even opposing views. It's been so good. So for your continued support, downloading, listening to episodes, people who've listened to past episodes and contributed to the PayPal, shout out to you. Like, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And your support is always so appreciated. And yeah, I'm just happy to, you know, dust off the microphones and be here again. So welcome to the platform. As usual, at the beginning of the year, and sort of like, I guess at the beginning of the season, but I kind of want to continue on the season 5 trajectory, all of that. We're starting with a solo episode. Thinking of wrapping up season 5 with a number of solo episodes, a series of solo episodes, just to like, you know, experiment with doing that more, not just in between, you know, interviews and stuff, but also, I guess, just to get back into the swing of things, you know. I started off, you know, strong doing interviews. I love doing interviews. If you want a feature, you can reach out. If you know someone who would be interested or interesting to talk about some of the things that we explore on this platform, please do reach out. And if there's someone you want to hear back again, also, like, please follow us on at In This Economy Podcast on Instagram. And, you know, you can reach out to me, your host, at Kim Nyajega on X, formerly Twitter. Yeah, we'll get into that. And I don't know what this blue sky thing is. I guess it's the new safer Twitter. I do not have a blue sky, but should I create one for the platform? Is it worthwhile? Is anyone on blue sky? Like, what's that about? Is it a safe space? Like, reach out, let me know. But yeah, so let's get into the episode. So the title of today's episode is Proof of Concept, a nice non-committal, airy-fairy, abstract title, which I'm hoping will make a lot more sense by the end of the episode, but let's get straight into it. By definition, a proof of concept is a demonstration that shows if an idea, product, or method is feasible or viable. It is a way to test if a concept works in the real world. So when, okay, since the last episode, I started and have settled into a new job, which regular listeners will know was a long time coming. So yay, that's been good. But it's in the finance field. And so when you're looking at a business proposal or a transaction proposal, one of the things people ask is, what's the proof of concept? And I think in life, there are various proofs of concepts, various demonstrations to show that things work. Like, we use examples, we try to be, you know, the whole idea of empathy to me is an idea of proof of concept. Like, oh, I, you know, this and this happened, therefore you should feel that, you know. But in our everyday lives, especially for me, I found that I would always sort of defer feeling good about things or defer feeling happy about things until something happened, right? And I spent a lot of time praying and hoping for those things to happen so I could feel good. Now, I've been fortunate enough that in 2023 and 2024, a lot of those things that I was praying for, hoping for, working towards actually came to fruition. And I kind of feel like now I'm, you know, being shown like, okay, this has happened. Are you any happier? Or this has happened, are you any less anxious? This has happened, are you any less calmer? I've had episodes where I've shared the things, the top 10 things that are giving me anxiety. I've constantly shared, you know, the things that have worried me or have contributed to my dissatisfaction with life in general. And now so much of that has changed. Is there proof of concept? Because now that some of those aspects of my life have indeed changed, am I any happier? Ooh, like that's, is there proof of concept to show that if this happens and this happens, you actually can be happier? And listen, since turning 30, there are a couple of, you know, concepts that have proved quite fruitful. For example, getting a new job. The way I used to describe how I was in my old work situation, I used this description with a friend of mine when I was explaining my mental state, you know, in 2021 and 2022, I felt like I was trying to sprint through honey. Like you're putting in a lot of effort and going nowhere very fast. And there's just so much around you that's making everything feel difficult. It feels hazy. You're almost choking. Like it's just hard. It's trying to sprint through honey is how I described it. And I always think to myself like, yo guys, once I get a new job, I cannot wait. I think I've even tweeted before, like I cannot wait until I can say I used to work in this field, or I used to work at this place. Like I cannot wait until that time, right? And then, you know, one day very quickly that changed. Am I any happier? Did I put too much value in changing my environment, meaning it would change my mental state, all of those things? Like what has the result been? And for this, it's pretty viable. I mean, if you spend 60% of your life at work, you want to be in a decent environment. Like I've learned that there is no such thing as a perfect work environment, but getting out of a harder situation or somewhere where you don't feel like you fit in or belong and coming into another place where you can take the lessons that you've learned, apply them, adjust your expectations, but also a space that is watering you and fostering you and allowing you to grow, it does a lot for your mentals. I'm not even going to hold you. I wake up tired. There are days I wake up with dread, but it is not nearly as often as it used to be. That is for sure. So yeah, kind of changing industries a little bit. Changing, just shifting is true. You've read the numerous articles and LinkedIn threads that if you want to, you know, increase your salary, don't work harder, change jobs. In this economy, in this world, I can attest proof of that's true as well. So yeah, that's an aspect of, life that's true. I can say another aspect, where proof of concept has been quite crazy was turning 30. I've been in my 30s now for a good year, shout out. And I was so scared of it. And I thought, like, yo, guys, if so many things don't happen by the time I'm 30, I'm going to be the most miserable 30-year-old Zimbabwean spinster on the planet. Like, that's what I thought. Like, I was in such a rush to fit so much into the last 2 years of my 20s that, got into a bunch of situations I had no business being in, applying to jobs and for opportunities I had no business for applying to. I just didn't know who I was because I thought who I was quote unquote supposed to be was like more important, So, and turning 30, the concept is that I would be miserable if I did not achieve certain things, if I didn't, have tangible big assets and have a net worth, like a five-figure net worth by the time I'm 30, if I wasn't married with a kid, or at least one kid or a kid on the way, if I was living in Zimbabwe, if I was doing, if all of these things were, set in stone by the time I was 30, I'm going to be so sad. And all of those things are still very true in my 30s. I am not sad. So that is not a viable thought process to think of. If anything, I am all the better for it because I don't care about a lot of things anymore. I was talking to, my friends, Nash and Nama, about this, where Nama asked the question, like, do you feel like you're coming more into yourself as you get older? And I'm like, yeah, but it's not because these parts of myself were not there, or I hadn't quite discovered them. There's just this thing of just caring a little bit less about society's expectations, especially as a woman, just caring a little bit less with every month that passes by, every year that passes by. Because I'm like, look, guys, I'm not here. Like I always say, for lack of trying. Okay, I've tried, and some things have worked, and some things have not. Yeah, sorry. Some things have worked and some things have not worked. And who is putting these expectations on me? I don't know. I grew up for a long time worried about my hypothetical mother-in-law and what she was going to think of me. I was conditioned and socialized to be so worried about this woman's opinion of me. Guess what? I'm 30 years old. I'm yet to meet this lady. And at this juncture, it's unfortunate that I did not meet her at 21 because I don't know. I don't know if I have enough act right after now to put on, people listening in Africa from those African backgrounds, with an African background, or just a, I don't know if other black people, brown people can relate, whoever's listening. But like, there's like the song and dance you're supposed to put on specifically for indoors. Like when you're meeting people, like, yeah, you're not going to go to your significant other's house for the first time and like show all like, your tattoos and all your piercings. You're not going to fully show yourself. You're going to do the social airs, the etiquette, the song and dance before you're fully yourself, right? Just out of respect. And I can definitely see that being the beginning of it, but I don't know. When, like, it doesn't take as much for that real me to come out. And by that, I mean not just being angry, but like, guys, I'm set in my ways as far as certain things are concerned. Like, I like my sparkling water, my sparkling water, and I have no qualms about it. I do enjoy sleeping in. Nothing beats a good lie in. Nothing beats a nap in the middle of the day. Like pulling an all-dayer is not my ministry. Do you know what I mean? Like I need to take a nap. And when I pull all-dayers, I always feel so exhausted the next day. So I really think to myself, what am I hoping to do tomorrow? What is tomorrow looking like? So I need to chill. Like there are times with social gatherings, like I need a day in between, or at least a 12-hour period to just sort of recover from myself. You know what I mean? And the social graces that we have as Zimbabweans, as Africans, as Shona people, or if ever you can relate, sometimes require you to be back to back to back to back. And I don't know. I haven't been put in the situation yet, but I don't know that I care enough to put myself out there to cross my own boundaries in that regard. I say all of this to say, the older you're getting, the less you care. Well, at least that's my experience and a lot of people's experience that I know of, right? So if you don't accomplish everything you want to accomplish in your 20s, does that mean you'll be miserable on your 30s? Not entirely, also not if you choose to, but also 30 is not a death sentence. Like, you're not that old. Like, yeah, you're old. Don't get it twisted. Like, Mariah Carey's, Emancipation of Mimi came out 20 years ago. Like, yeah, we're old. Like, don't. Like, I was in primary school when that album came out. You know what I mean? So, granted, time has passed. A lot of time has passed. But in this age of information, where so much happens online and there's so many culturally significant moments that happen, it feels like ages since that period of time. But it doesn't mean 30 is old. I don't feel old. I sometimes joke about it, when things are like bones are cracking, or you can't get up without making a sound, or you can't cross your legs the same way you used to. But aside from all of those changes, there's still time. There's still time to accomplish things. It doesn't mean you turn 30 and you need to stop trying to accomplish things. Will some things be harder to accomplish than others? For sure. But we all have such unique experiences, and unique points of view. So we could just keep it pushing. So that's another, proof of concept that I guess has kind of sort of been debunked based on life experience. So yeah, those were just some empirical examples from my own life and my personal experience where I thought about something conceptually, it actually happened, and was the concept feasible? In some instances, yeah, like with the job, and in some instances, no, like with the fear of turning 30. those were not viable or feasible expectations. It gets a little bit bitter. That's just my experience, though. And I'd love to hear about yours. Are there things that you thought would happen if there was a certain or specific turn of events? And was it reasonable to expect that? Or when those things actually happened, you found out. Let me know. But yeah, speaking of finding out, though, on a global level, economically, there are a lot of things look like are gonna happen this year, and we're gonna find some things out. but I think one thing that really strikes me and sticks out to me that will be concern it's both concerning, but would be fascinating to see the impact of would be Donald Trump's second term, specifically for developing countries, like Zimbabwe, where I'm at right now. So Donald Trump was reelected, as we know. He's been in office for a week and has pretty much shaken everything up as promised. But one of the things that he did was cancel and immediately freeze all foreign aid outside of America. So all the US funded agencies, government agencies, but also nonprofit organizations that were, yeah, anything that was funded by the US government has been issued with stop work orders for at least the next 90 days, right? Which is deeply concerning. Majority of a lot of what we depend on in the healthcare sector, I think about 60%, for example, 60% of antiretroviral medications for people infected with HIV. About 60% comes from USAID, which is an American governmental organization that gives aid to Zimbabwe. Please correct me if I'm wrong about that statistic, but from my research, that's the last and most reliable thing that I saw online on the WHO website. So yeah, stuff like that. Like, if not that that aid stopped immediately, at least for the next 90 days, a good 60% of people who suffer from HIV and AIDS may not be able to access medication, may not be able to benefit from that free or really affordable medication, which is deeply, deeply concerning. I am not too sure how to help or intervene, but if anyone knows of any ideas, please also feel free to share links, information, whatever that could help anyone who is directly affected or their loved ones listening. If you know of anything, please, I would be happy to use what little, whatever reach I have to let people know how to deal with that. But the concept here that a lot of academics and researchers have touted is that for countries like Zimbabwe and a lot of other African states that are largely dependent on Western donor organizations to receive, you know, aid, basic things like food and medication and other essentials. If those, the supply of that, if that foreign aid stops, that will force governments, like the local governments, to either be held accountable or to change their ways or to make them do something to reach the plight of the people, because there's no savior for at least the next 90 days. And we're about to see what the outcomes of that will be, you know. If you'd want to hear my personal predictions, in the country I live in, I really think it's just going to trigger, if it's possible to loot even more, I really believe with the level of greed and corruption that is at every level of government, that may become worse, and it's going to be worse not for just precious stones and minerals, but for basic healthcare needs. You know, it's going to be giving, like, you know, when COVID started in Zimbabwe, and that was like sort of like a great, well, when COVID didn't start, but when it got here, when it got to Africa, but when it got to Zimbabwe specifically, that was sort of the great equalizer, because a lot of people who had direct access to the powers that be, unfortunately, you know, succumbed to the illness. They were victims of the pandemic. Like, no amount of power and greed could insulate them from the harsh realities of not having access to basic medical care, whether it was ventilators, whether it was doctors refusing to treat people because they didn't have enough personal protective equipment, gloves and masks and all of that, when those were really rare. When all of that was rife, that was sort of a great equalizer. And what I fear, but unfortunately foresee, is that now the looting is not just going to be, you know, the big money-making things, but it's going to be medications. It's going to be whatever little aid is there, there's going to be looting. And the wealth gap between the people who have and have not is just going to increase drastically, even from the people who had some access to things. It might be because certain medications are no longer being given up for free, they're going to be in higher demand, and basic economics would know that that will tend to drive the prices up until the market reaches another point of saturation. So that's what I fear. But that's not to say that it could all be negative. There could be some places, some developing countries, where people demand more of their government, and their government, someone gets a conscience, someone grows a pair, puts in beneficial policies to alleviate some of the mishaps. I'm not even convinced, but I would love to be proved wrong. Let me put it that way. I would love for the outcome to be different than I wouldn't be surprised, a lot of people expect might happen. That could be the case. Like, from an academic perspective, this sort of proof of concept is something to, like, think about. But on a practical perspective, it is worrisome, you know? It's just, I'm going to go. I'm still doing a lot of research and deep diving into, like, Donald Trump and what his policies will mean for us, but also not just policies, but what his personality, what his caricature represents, and the rise of like conservatism the world over, because Trump doesn't just impact, you know, American policy, and he doesn't just impact us economically, but socially. Him coming in 2015, around there, 2015, around that time, also saw a rise in this conservatism, but not just, you know, conservatism as we knew it back then, or as I knew and understood it back then, but a more harsher and convicted side. It's not lost on me, and I don't think it's coincidental that Trump's rise has been almost in tandem with the rise of what we know as red pill content, that really somewhat, I can't even call it conservative, but it's like the really hyper masculine, hyper misogynist, like schools of thought that, you know, that a lot of characters, your Andrew Tate's, your Fresh and Fits, like those kind of platforms sort of grew and started being seen as practical, the practical and logical explanations, the response to like the wokeness that was created under the Obama administration, you know, and somehow conservatism is, those are the free thinkers now. And if you're liberal, you're brainwashed or you're traumatized, you know, but you thinking like all these other political commentators, these pundits and all of that, because you agree with their thought process, that makes you the free thinker. And those of us who have more left-leaning or liberal views are the ones who've been brainwashed. You know, like, I don't get it. I don't understand it. Like, picking the most extreme leftist examples and comparing it with the most soft and fluffiest of white right-wing examples is crazy. Like, I see the comparisons. There was one interview that went viral with that Destiny guy who was liberal talking to like a MAGA, a Make American Great Again, you know, loyalist on CNN, I think it was. And the MAGA loyalist, the conservative, was just like, yeah, Donald Trump comes up under such critique, but like George Floyd wasn't a great person. He was a drug addict and a porn star and everything, but he's like the face of a movement. And Donald Trump, who's just done this, this, and this, is a terrible character, but George Floyd is a hero. And I was just kind of like, what? I mean, she was like, why should we hold Trump to a higher standard? I'm like, last I checked, George Floyd wasn't the one running for president here. You know, once you're running for public office, I am so sorry, but once you're in a public place in a position of power, the standards for you are different. Point blank, period. George Floyd was murdered on camera, and his murderers are convicted for his unlawful death. Like, people were enraged by what had happened with that. That's what sparked the protest, not George Floyd as a person. But you get someone who wants to be a global leader, claims to be running for a Christian agenda and all of those kind of things, you're of course going to hold them to high standard. Like, but I am brainwashed and you're the free thinker, and you can't differentiate between ruthless killing and putting the, like, do you see what I'm saying? Like, I don't know how the two can be equated, but somehow, some way, that's how the free thinker is supposed to think, like those straw men, you know, weird arguments. You know what I mean? I don't know. I'm perplexed by that. Anyway, that's an episode I will definitely be more articulate and have like my points put out, so we can unpack that, we can deep dive that, we can explore that. And if you have any insights as well that you'd want to share, please, please, please do reach out to me on social media at In This Economy Podcast on Instagram and at Kimya Jeka, me, your host, on X. And as I pointed out at the beginning of the show, if there are any other interesting social media platforms I could see the podcast could benefit from being on to reach more people or to continue, you know, interacting with you, I will put those in the show notes eventually at some point. But yeah, so that's about it for today. I do hope you enjoyed the episode. And if, once again, you'd want to feature, you want to hear someone who's been here before, or you have an interesting topic that you think I could have a great time deep diving into, do let me know. But yeah, so take care, and I will catch you in the next one, which will definitely for sure be sooner than next year. Like, yeah, you can hold me to that. So yes, no, take care, and we'll catch you next time.